shot. All right. Shootings are contagious. Prosecutor studies King County gun violence from a public health angle. A story in the Seattle Times. Man, this thing is chock full of data. Lots and lots of graphs to look at. Lots of people with lots of guns. And you see the A and B axis, and it shows you who gets shot. What was the biggest takeaway you got from the article, Tom?
Well, first off, I like the metaphor that you're using, that they treat it like an epidemiologist treats disease, contagion, that if you're trying to track down a particular disease, you look at where it goes and how it travels and how it spreads. And they said, let's look at gun violence not as a criminal justice matter. I mean, you can still do that. No prosecutors are going to take a different approach. But if you look at it as a public health issue, what do we find out about how these kinds of gun violence issues, who's involved? Can we predict who might be involved? If we can, are there ways, once we know this much, that you can intervene? The important thing initially is that when we started this a couple of years ago, Dow Constantine, there was no data on this. Every individual police department had their own separate data, and they kept, they played by different rules. So this time in this pilot project, they got 8 city departments to sort of consistently give public health board information, and then by next year, I think they're going to expand it to all 40 police jurisdictions around. And because of that, we'll get an even much broader understanding of how things go. But I think so. The basic metaphor is an insight. Think of it as a disease. How you deal with it. The second thing is the thing that they found out to me was it felt sort of obvious. The idea that if you know somebody who's been shot, or know somebody who has shot, that increases your chances of getting shot, or being the shooter. And if you know a friend or a relative and all this, that it kind of grows within itself. That part seems pretty obvious. And they did mention in King County in these 8, almost all of these gun violence things happen south of Seattle. That's where the concentration is. That I think that would be a good guess, and most of us without any data wouldn't hunch at. And then the third thing is, what kind of intervention would actually work? And that's the tricky part, is how easily once we get this information, how can we change things? And the suggestion is, well, one thing is, if we could make our neighborhoods safer and convince the youngsters coming up that their safety is already guaranteed by the society they live in, they don't have to carry a gun for their own protection, that would be a step forward. But boy, that seems like a big bridge to cross.
Right. So if you did look at it like it's contagious and it's actually some type of disease, then you would have, you could either inoculate, right? Or you could, you could inoculate or isolate. Somebody has TB, you don't let them into the general population. Or there's also educate. So these are some of the primary interventions that community comes in or society comes in with to stop the spread. The thing is, there is no spread of this. You see where it happens, and it continues to happen, and whether it's the 1970s, 80s, 90s, it's the same deal. You have a place where people are growing up, and there's no one to give them any sort of direction, or they reject the direction, or there's nothing to look forward to. You then have to get a gun because the guy across the street has a gun. If he has a gun, you got to get a gun. If you don't have a gun, you're going to get shot. So basically what you have is, you don't have it spreading. It's not a disease. It's centrally located in one spot, and whether it's south side or south central or in Seattle, or whether it's happening in a particular part of Tacoma, or whether it happens in Chicago, wherever it is, it's about the fact that a 12-year-old boy has really nothing to look forward to. No one's there to mentor the kid. And then that kid ends up joining a gang, because most of these things, also, Tom, as you see the statistics, it's mostly gang, right? One guy shoots one guy, another guy shoots another guy. If you get shot once, chances of you getting shot again are pretty high. The reason they're going to shoot you a second time is because you didn't die the first time.
That's right. And that's why they give this really a tragic example of this 13-year-old girl, the county's youngest homicide victim so far this year. She was gunned down with a 19-year-old who had been, mixed up in other gang shootings, I think it was. But they said, so with Elizabeth, she was first busted for spray painting gang graffiti. Then she was later caught with marijuana at school. The family then tried to get her into a boot camp or an at-risk youth program. but they didn't get support from the police or the school officials because she hadn't committed a serious crime. And they say, see, maybe what we ought to do is we ought to try to nip these things in the bud earlier so she won't be a 13-year-old victim of a drive-by shooting because she's hanging out with gang members. There are chances for us to intervene earlier if we can. Mm-hmm. But you're right, John. I think if you're skeptical about this, it's like this – when I was reading it, and I support everything we're doing, and I don't have a problem with the metaphor like you do, but I do think that that is such a hard bridge to make, this idea of, yeah, we can identify who the problem people are going to be, but can we intervene enough in their lives to make them whole and safe? And I don't know how. That's a steep climb, I'm afraid.
It reminds me, I've said this before on the air, bearing repeating, when William F. Buckley ran for mayor of New York, you know how I'm going to end this story, he was on stage at a debate, and the only reason he was there debating, he knew he'd never win, but he just said, I want to represent the conservative point of view in the very liberal city of New York. So he's, at one point, somebody says, and this is like 1967 or something like that, whatever the year was, how will we stop and prevent second generation being involved in welfare, crime, and dropout rates? And he said, William F. Buckley said, I will spell the word for you because you haven't heard the word in a long time, but it is the only way to effectively change the direction of people that are stuck in that system. And the word is orphanages. And, of course, the next day, the New York Times, the Post, and everybody that had a thing talks about it. William F. Buckley, conservative, wants to take families, tear them apart, and put children in orphanages. His point was the only way you stop the next generation is to break the cycle by removing that child from that home that started in the first place and have that kid go somewhere else. That's draconian, I guess, but it's probably it would be more effective than just coming up with more stories and trying to make everybody else feel like, oh, it's contagious and it's coming to a neighborhood near you. No, it's not. It never has. It hasn't left those neighborhoods, and it's not going to spread. But they try to get people to think that, oh, yeah, you know what? At any minute, it's going to be affecting you. No, it's in one neighborhood, and it's unfortunate that that's where it just continues to grow.
Well, first off, I think that a lot of bad experiences can happen in orphanages, too. I'm not sure that that's going to be the refuge that Mr. Buckley was predicting. Mm-hmm. But it does, if you think of orphanages as societally supported efforts at helping kids, then I could get behind that idea. I'm not sure that we need to divorce them from their parents and their siblings because family is important. Mm-hmm. But if the family is infected, yes, that is a concern. And how best to intervene, I think, will be the next step. But it's going to be a much harder step than collecting all this data.
Yeah.